This is the beautiful game
described by two ugly gentlemen.
Glory to Columbus!
Who are probably sitting at a soccer bar near you.
McBride's in the box. A hard cross. McBride scores! It's 3-0 United States!
Welcome to Bone and Beam United.
Happy Soccer Podcast Day. What is up? I am Bone.
And I am Beam.
Plenty to discuss. We have a lot of champions to talk about. We have Champions League. We have Champions Cup. We have a team that we love that is in a Champions Cup final. So we're going to talk about the Crew, obviously, quite a bit. There's another black and gold team in a Champions League final. We will discuss that. Beamer's favorite English team pulled off
a championship.
A shocking, shocking upset. So yeah. We'll get into all that. He takes his victory lap and all the fun there. So we will get into all that as we go through. And also a little surprise extra. We may have a new member of CONCACAF,
and I saw it yesterday, and I don't know if you guys had seen it during the show before I sent it over. So the first person I literally thought of was you.
Oh, yeah. I'm very excited about this new addition. We will talk about that later in the show
We're taking the pod on the road.
Oh, I hope so. I hope we take the whole station on the road if this happens. We go up and watch some U.S. soccer in, spoiler alert, Greenland.
And then there we're never going to come back.
Never come back. That's right. So, Beamer, weekend for me, Memorial Day weekend. Hope everybody had a good one. Mm-hmm. I went to the Indy 500, which I won't bore you if you're not a soccer or a racing fan. Although I know there's some crossover between soccer and like F1. You tend to get similar crowds who aren't afraid of getting up early and watching a sporting event. Yeah. That's a thing. There's some appeal. But Indy 500, fun spectacle. I would say it's worth checking out once in your lifetime if you've never gone. Even if you don't like auto racing, do you like people? Do you like watching weirdos? Like the amount of stuff you see at the Indy 500 is just fascinating, beyond all fascinating. 350,000 plus people inside
all
the track.
All walks of life.
Yeah, it's everything you can imagine. It is quite the spectacle. But while I was there was rain delay, and I told this story on Twitter, but if you didn't see it, there were some gentlemen wearing Sunderland jerseys. So, of course, me being a Sunderland fan, I'm going to go right over to them and be an annoying American and be like, oh, where are you from? Hey, oh, wow, hey. So I thought, what do I say to these people to walk up to them?
Sunderland till I die.
No. I went a little more in knowledge.
Aaron Gobra.
More like that. There's the phrase that Sunderland fans that they will use on their social media, the thing that is like kind of their hashtag is Howay the Lads, which just means more or less like, here we go, boys. Let's go about it. You know, it's. They've got their dialect up in the north.
Up the lads.
Yeah, it's in that vein.
Okay.
So I walk up and I say, how way the lads like that? And they turn around and both of them are like, oh, how way the lads? Hey, hey. Like they were just ready. They were great. So they were both from Sunderland. They were huge fans. And they were, and so I said, hey, you know, I'm an American. I didn't, you know, grow up with it, but I try to keep up with Sunderland. I know it wasn't our best year. And they go, oh, just absolute shit year. Oh, jeez. You know, just going off on that. But next year will be better, right? So then I said, so the first time at the Indy 500, and they said, yeah, and the weather's coming in. I said, you guys got a place to shelter here because we're all trying to bunker down, make sure we don't get hit by the thunderstorms. We didn't know how bad they would be. And they were, of course, then going into, what's this weather like you guys have? Tornadoes? What are the tornadoes? Yeah.
just wait.
Well, they were like, how bad does this get? And we said, well, it can get bad, but it's rare that a tornado comes, you know. We're just talking about that stuff. Talking to these guys about the race. So they came over because IndyCar is changing some things with the cars and the engines may not sound the same next year. And they said, we want to experience an IndyCar race and an Indy 500 before they change these cars and they may never sound like what they do now, which is, you know, kind of a big thing for race car fans. If you're a car geek, people talk about that stuff.
Well, because I remember they changed F1 cars like a few years back and they don't. Like Lewis Hamilton's like, man, if we could get that sound again back in the sport. Like it's a big thing.
Well, it's hybrid engines. That's what F1 has. Indy cars are going to that. Okay. These guys are F1 fans too. And they said, it's not the same now. And we wanted to see an Indy car race with the current engines before they go hybrid. So they came. And then, of course, the rain was coming and they were like, we're worried we're not going to get it in. I said, well, can you stick around tomorrow? When's your flight? And they said, it's tomorrow morning. We have to leave. We can't stick around for the race. And I thought, oh, man, could you imagine flying all the way across the world to watch an event? And you paid all this money. You've got hotels. I'm sure they had a nice time. But the main thing gets
thousands of dollars.
Main thing gets postponed, and it's like their one attempt to see this. It's not like they come back next year because they have a specific reason for being there. So we shared a moment, we talked, and I said, you know, hey, hopefully it'll get through. And the guy even said to me, he almost had tears in his eyes. He's like, if I just get to see them go by once at full speed with all that noise, that's what I want. That's why we came over here. They get 5 or 10 laps in, I'll be thrilled. Then they can shut the race down and postpone it. And I just need to see them run at full speed. And I was like, all right. So they started the race. There was a caution a few laps, you know, in.
Classic.
And I've learned when there's a caution, as soon as that caution flag waves, boom, I hit the stands, I get downstairs, I go to the bathroom or go get food or whatever I'm going to, what I've been waiting to do, I go do that because then everyone else will slowly get to that, like, within a couple minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So as I'm walking out, I see this guy up in the stands, and he just had a big smile on his face. And I said, Sunderland, you know, like this. And he turns and looks, and I didn't even get their names. I felt bad.
Yep.
And he looks down at me, and I was like, you saw it. And he's just like, oh, yeah. And he's just huge smile. And it was just one of these human moments,
yeah,
right,
that that's cool.
Only happens because of soccer or whatever, shared sports experiences. Let's put it in that context. But, like, I never would have gone up and talked to this dude if he didn't have a Sunderland jersey on. And obviously he would have no reason probably to talk to me other than just as a human if I didn't know some Sunderland stuff. So it's yet again another reason why soccer rules, and you get to connect with people from all around the world, and it's fun. I like it.
That's pretty amazing, man. Yeah, I can't imagine the stress that they probably had during that delay. Because for us, I know that you were in Indianapolis. Like, it came a few hours later, like that same storm cell, like, came for us, and like it kind of missed us. Like, it wasn't crazy, but I was watching like your videos or Twitter. What, like, I mean, we had it on like the broadcast on. I'm like, man,
it pounded.
It's pretty.
It was.
It's,
I mean, it was
gnarly.
It was intense for like 20 minutes, and then it kind of just became a drizzle, and it wasn't too bad. But you know, if you're not used to North American weather, if you're used to more like the driving range you get in England or something, where here you get these pop up thunderstorms that can be quite a thing, and apparently they were just not. They were like, we don't know what to expect, but, you know, so I get that too. I would be the same way if I was in England or somewhere else going, hey, they're saying this is like bad, but how, like earthquakes in California.
Yeah.
It's like, oh yeah, there's an earthquake. Well, how bad was that? Well, for Californians, it's like, oh, it was nothing. For me, it might be terrifying.
Yeah. So. I'm trying to think like the last time I was that excited about something at like a sporting event, like a true, like once in a lifetime memory that would have been created. And I honestly don't know what that would have been that I was at like the last time where I was like that keyed up and amped up. Obviously, like MLS Cup, that was awesome.
That's
that was
here.
Like, that was locally. Like, I slept in my bed that
night.
I didn't spend thousands of dollars traveling to like go to this one thing.
You know what
thing.
It would probably be for us would be like if with the World Cup coming in a few years, if we even not traveling overseas, just if we traveled to say like Kansas City or California or somewhere to go watch a U.S. game, and it's like, oh man, U.S. is drawing Germany, let's say, or some big,
whoever.
You know, oh, this is a big game. Let's see what can happen. And you get there, and then it's like, oh, weather may actually cancel this. And it's like,
no, you have a flight out the next morning.
You have a flight out the next morning. You're like,
5 o'clock.
You're like, I can't miss this. I paid all this money. This is a once in a lifetime opportunity. I got to see it, right? Like, that's what it would have to be. I'm guessing that's the only thing it would equate to for us.
Totally.
But, yeah. So anyway. Yeah, plan accordingly if you're going to the World Cup, I guess. If add in a day for weather because you never effing
know. 2 years
know.
From now, we're going to have those same conversations.
Oh, it's coming quickly. Be surprised how quick it'll be here. Hopefully next summer we're talking about traveling for the FIFA Club World Cup in the U.S. as well. That would be another thing. And we will have more of a reason to try to do that if the crew can win on Saturday. So let's.
How you feeling?
Nervous, man. I mean, here's one of the biggest unknowns for me is obviously this Pachuca team is a bit of an unknown just because we're not as familiar with it. So that's one aspect. Here,
I feel like even we're not as familiar with them as we were in Monterrey or Tigres.
Right. Yeah. Well, we'd played Monterrey before. Tigres, there was some familiarity too. I think we might have played Tigres previously, but like, Tigres, I feel like I watched way more of their games. I've watched way more Monterrey games. I've not watched a lot of Pachuca soccer, I'll be honest. And I know they've been one of the most successful teams when it comes to this.
Yeah.
They are a team that I think has been to 5 of these finals of the CONCACAF Champions League or now Champions Cup, and they've won all 5 that they've been in. So they know how to – I mean, the organization knows how to get it done. I won't say that this necessarily group of guys does because – they are not necessarily the same group that did this years ago, but they have won in 2002, 2007, 2008, 2010. But the last one was 2017.
Okay.
You know, that's 7 years ago.
It's a different turnover.
Different guys, roster. Different team. But their history in this tournament has been very good. So does that matter? It could play into an effect because of the fact that there's just a pride on the line, and this team has a lot of fans that know what to expect here and expect a lot of their team. The team's probably going to feel that pressure. But from the standpoint of just, you know, how difficult this will be, one, you're on the road in a home environment for the other team. It's not like a neutral site. Two, it's at 8,000 square feet, 8,000 feet of elevation.
Yeah.
So that's obviously a bit of a challenge. I saw a video of the crew training. I saw Adam King actually tweet out.
Yeah, I saw it too.
They're on the bikes with the mask, the altitude, you know, lack of oxygen, trying to get themselves acclimated as much as you can. I think
one of the trainers as well was talking about how they've given each player basically like a hyperbaric chamber.
Yes.
Where they can simulate like different sort of altitudes. So he's like, when they're taking a nap, when they're sleeping, if they're just like reading a book, if they're recovering at home, like we want them to spend as much time as physically possible to get them ready for what's about to happen.
So oddly enough, I've read a bit about this only because last year I went to Colorado for my buddy. He was training and ran in a road race or a trail run.
Okay.
100-mile trail run up in Colorado at Leadville, Colorado, where the Leadville 100, the starting elevation in the town of Leadville is 10,200 feet. It is the highest incorporated town in the U.S. as far as elevation goes. So you start 2 miles above sea level.
Yeah.
And then from there, they actually go over peaks that are over 13,000 feet above sea level. So oxygen is at a premium. And so, of course, me going there, not even to run, I just wanted to be, I didn't want to deal with all the headaches and all the, you know, fatigue and stuff that they talk about. So I looked into everything that, you know, that I could about what that does to you. So obviously, if you're not familiar, when you go up to that elevation, your oxygen levels are depleted because the oxygen, the air is thinner. There's less oxygen that you're getting. Mm-hmm. So your body then has to compensate, and your red blood cells are just not getting as much oxygen as they need. So they have to work harder. Your body has to work harder to produce more of them. And it takes your body an amount of time. I forget how many days it is.
I want to say at that altitude, I want to say it's two or three full weeks to like actually get yourself to be normalized.
Yes.
That.
Yes. That's correct. If you are someone who is like doing a marathon or something, they would recommend going out as early as you could to get fully acclimated. Obviously, the crew doing extreme exertion,
yeah,
same thing. They want as many weeks as they could in that environment to get prepared for it. But that's why if you go look, the U.S. training grounds for like the Olympics, they're in Colorado Springs at 6,000 feet of elevation. I know for a while, the distance running program for the U.S. was in somewhere, I want to say in California,
okay,
up in the mountains, and it was like at 8,000 or 9,000 feet of elevation was kind of where their base camp was, and they would go running through the mountains. And the whole reason for that is because if you live in it, your body just adjusts,
yep,
and over time you develop a totally different, you know, way of processing oxygen. That then when you go to lower elevations, you're like a superhuman compared to the average person,
because
your body's just processing it so much better. So that gives you a huge advantage. So clearly that is going to be a thing for the crew. I'm not trying to make it out like this is the reason the crew have no chance of winning, or if they lose, this is why. I'm saying it's certainly something that has to be thought about when you're talking about playing this game.
Well, yeah, it does. And I mean, especially too, for a one-off, like, I mean, we're not talking about years in the past. It's like, if you go down and if you lose 2-0 or 2-1, 1-0, whatever it may be, like there's an opportunity for you then to come back home, or there's not that home game initially. It's like, now you got to batten down the hatches and like beware the storm that's happening down in Pachuca. Like, it's so different than what it was even just last year, right? Wasn't last year two leg final?
Yes.
And so this year, I don't know why. I haven't looked up the reason as to why it's just a one leg tie. I'd feel much better if you got one here and then one down there, but you're going in for a 90 minute match at altitude. Like, yeah, it's going to be a lot different. And then, God forbid, you go to an extra 30 minutes. I can't imagine what those guys
will be dealing with. Right? So going, these are the things that will factor in because of that altitude. I do think it's such the biggest X factor to this is if you are in that situation and you are at 90 minutes and it goes to extra time, that 30 minutes where the Crew have certainly done plenty of good in their time when they're in finals or they've had to play in these type of situations, they've gotten the job done. But that you cannot count on in this type of environment. I mean, I do think that has to go into game planning a little bit for Wilfried Nancy to presume like, hey, man, 90 minutes is you don't want to just give your team a defeat if they get into extra time and say, we can't possibly beat that team. But you are going to be at a distinct disadvantage, even slight. They're great athletes. They're training for it. They're doing everything they can to acclimate, but nothing prepares you, I think, for it. I will tell you this, just in my little, again, not an athlete, limited experience, not doing anything strenuous. When I got up to where I stayed in Colorado, it was at 9,000 feet of elevation, so a little higher than where they're going to be in this area of Mexico. Like the first couple days, I just had headaches and I was hydrating. I was doing everything they told me to do, I wasn't out doing anything strenuous and I would get headaches just at times.
Being alive.
Literally. Yeah. Just kind of like they would come and go, but it was just this pressure. Like you kind of just felt like, man, I'm just not myself. And I'm sure they're doing everything they can to get out there as early as possible to get acclimated to this stuff. But you know, it is going to be a difficult task to go and handle that. So clearly, I don't want to hype on it too much, but that's a big thing. 8,000 feet of elevation is nothing to sniff at.
No.
Even Monterey, I thought that was a pretty high elevation. It wasn't. It was only like, I think, 2,000 feet. So not the same thing you're dealing with here. They're going to deal with much more of an elevation challenge at this event.
And that's why it's always a tough task, too, like when the U.S. goes down to Azteca, because Azteca is a couple hours south in Mexico City. And Mexico City is at like a mile high, right? Aren't they at like 6,000 feet? So, I mean, this is plus 2,000 kind of on the spectrum of that. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. I'm feeling pretty good about it. I mean, again, I think obviously when we get into the game, you're going to be heartbroken if they come this far and lose. But if you look at what they've done and look at what they've accomplished already in the lead up to this, I mean, it was massive barriers that this team broke down, was it not? I mean, we haven't seen it anything like it in club history. You go down to Mexico, you clip two Mexican opponents in a row. One was via shootout. One was a thrashing in front of 60,000 fans down in Monterrey. And so we were worried, too, because after the Monterrey game, they come back. They're immediately against Cincinnati at home, lose that, but then bounce immediately right back, like three wins in a row. On the road. Like three wins on the road, all without Cucho. It's like, boy, just when you were starting to maybe have like some bad thoughts, when it's like, ugh, could it come at any worse of a time for you to not be playing great? Like you're out of form, and then immediately just boom, like right back up to, okay, now you're feeling better heading down to Pachuca.
Yeah. So this is a good aspect for the Crew. And we'll get to, because there's a few things to take away from that. But one of them is the Crew have been playing and playing regularly and playing better since that Cincinnati game. Now, they're playing against bad competition mostly, but they went on the road in MLS, which we know is not easy, and took 9 points in three matches.
Chicago, Montreal, and Orlando.
I don't care who they played. It was three games on the road in MLS, and you got 9 points out of it, which is certainly above expectations, I think, for even a team that's a defending champ. So that's very good. The other thing for Pachuca is they have not played, I think, in a few weeks because they've been off – because they lost in their playoffs to Club America, which Club America won Liga MX, and it's weird. They have this odd little history with Club America in the last month because Pachuca beat Club America to get to this final. That's who they defeated in the CONCACAF Champions Cup. But then in their playoffs, they tied them, I think, twice, 1-1 and 1-1, and I'm guessing then they lost on penalties or something. I'm not sure how that worked. In either case, they were knocked out of this tournament, I want to say, at least 2 or 3 weeks ago. So they have not played a competitive match, I don't believe, in a while.
May 11th was their last competitive match.
All right, so there you go. So it'll be about 3 weeks.
It will be
on,
three weeks.
Yeah, once they play this game on Saturday. So there is something to be said for not having any game action for 3 weeks as a team. You can train all you want. You can recover. I'm sure they're all feeling great from an injury standpoint and all that. But there is something to be said for your lack of form. You know, I mean, there's no doubt about it.
We saw it after 9 days rest coming back from Monterrey, we did against Cincinnati.
It did not look good.
No.
So I think there's an evening out there that could happen as well. But now let's go focus on another aspect of the situation. You mentioned Cucho Hernandez.
Mm-hmm.
Cucho has not played basically in that same time frame. He's been out with the back injury, I believe is what the official reason is.
Yeah.
And I don't know if there's any other reason for that, but that's what we've been told. So what are we getting from Cucho? Again, this can work in the favor of the Crew in a way, but it's also something that we'd rather have a healthy Cucho for this match. Yeah. But the argument can be made. Pachuca now looks at this Crew team and says, do we prepare for, you know, Christian Ramirez, Diego Rossi, and that kind of like way those two have kind of paired up and the way this team has played in the last couple weeks without Cucho? Or do we have to prepare for one of the greatest false nines currently playing mm-hmm. when he's healthy and when he's on? And that's a whole different style you have to deal with. So I think they are going to have a little bit of a guessing game when it comes into, I'm sure they expect Cucho to play. I'm sure they will anticipate that and prepare for that.
I am too.
But there's a chance Wilfried Nancy rolls out a lineup that's not feature him starting. Now, they'd probably look at that as a benefit for Pachuca, but it would change what they're doing defensively. They would not be probably defending the Crew the same way because obviously Ramirez and him are very different players up top.
Well, they're obviously different players. I'm just wondering now that since we're talking about strategy, like if he's not full go, you know, like if he is still struggling and when they get down there, when they're at elevation, it's just, it's a matter of fact that he can't give you 90, but sure. Let's say that he can give you a really good 45 or a good 30. I mean, would you rather him be starting and then having to be subbed off in the second half, middle of the way, if you're like tied or you're up, whatever the result may be at that time? Or would you rather have the confidence in your guys to say, Cucho, you can give us 60. We're going to put you in the 60th. If we get to extra time, you're going to have the full 60. Or we
and you'll
need
be out there for anything else, penalties or whatever else comes up.
We need to see the full. We can get you for like the last 30 minutes of the game.
Yeah.
I'm with you, man. You want him out there for a full 90 minutes plus stoppage time. Like if he can give you a 120. Obviously, like that's what you want.
We just spent all this time talking about conditioning and who knows, maybe for the last 3 weeks, they've actually sent him down there and he's just been getting red blood cells up. Maybe that's the whole thing is he's going to come out and look like a superhuman when he gets out. I don't know. But to your point, like if you're not game fit, you can train all you want. You can be healthy in that way. But obviously, he's been limited with training, too. So this is all, I mean, again, they're being cautious with this. I'm sure the caution is based on they want him available and ready for this game.
Totally.
And I'm sure he will go out, and if they start him, he can play 120 minutes. He's not an old guy. He's a young player in his prime. But it's going to be a slog for anyone to go at 8,000 feet of elevation.
And they have subbed him off, like, in the 70th, 80th minute, too. Like,
sure.
He rarely does, I mean, not I say rarely, but you get into these situations. Like, he was subbed off in Monterey. Now, the game was kind of in the bag, but, like, you put in Russell Rowe or you're putting in Christian Ramirez, like, it's not often either that he goes start to finish, at least not in this competition he hasn't.
Yeah. I mean, the reality is this team has some question marks coming into this. Pachuca has their question marks. These are both great teams with great depth and a lot of talent. Pachuca, from what I remember of watching them, the little bit that I did, and from what I remember reading about them when this first, you know, when they were announced and kind of their last few games they played before this all, their run ended, they are a team that is similar to the Crew in the sense that they did not have the biggest stars in Mexico. They have a system that works really well, and their coach is very good at keeping their players, their younger players, in that system. They have a lot of young, talented players. Mm-hmm. They are not going to be the guys who are, I don't believe, out there buying up the biggest talent. They've been better at developing it. Their youth academy is very good. So you are going to see a team that in some ways mirrors the Crew in the sense of growing their own and making sure that their players are very well drilled in what they're supposed to do. So we'll find out how those styles contrast and how they play against each other. But it's going to be a very interesting match. I read some quotes from Diego Rossi, and I guess maybe this is where I would leave off unless you've got some additional thoughts on it. Diego Rossi was talking about the pressure from this game. And he said, we don't have another kind of pressure. Or at least I don't feel like this. I want to win every game, and this is what I'm working for. We want to win like we already did there in Mexico, but we just have our own pressure that we put on ourselves. We want to win. So, yeah, I have maybe that pressure to win, but not from another source. So basically saying the pressure of this matchup, of the expectations of this matchup, those don't add to the pressure. For me, it's the same pressure I feel every time because I'm trying to win.
Well, and he's been terrific recently. He's been really good.
That's the big key for me.
Yeah.
He's been terrific in these CONCACAF Champions Cup games. Mm-hmm. And he's been terrific in this absence of Cucho. And I think much like Cucho, when he came here, we got a sense of what he could do very quickly.
Immediately.
Yeah, immediately. Rossi, it took us some time. But I feel like in the playoffs especially, you started to see him, I mean, I was dogging him in the FC Cincinnati game, and then he scored the goal that that was it tied it up or put us? No, he tied it up, right? Because then
tied it.
Ramirez is
then
the one who headed in Cucho's header or Cucho's cross he put in and sealed the game. But like Diego Rossi had one of the biggest goals of the season in that game. Diego Rossi has been a monster, I think, this season for this team. And the amount of times where I looked at it at times and said, I'm not sure, he looks a little out of position, he looks whatever, those are gone. He has played ridiculously well in these last few weeks and has really shown the leadership. I think that part of the reason you bring a guy like that in is because you think you're going to play in games like this, and I expect him to have a huge impact on this game.
Yeah, I do too. Again, he's been terrific as of late. I'm just wondering again, and it might, I bet it's not keeping him up at night, but what, because Wolf knows exactly what Cucho is dealing with, like what his strategy is going to be.
I'm sure.
Because that's, the more that I think about it, that's probably storyline number one. If he can't give you a full 90, when are you going to implement him?
Cucho. Yeah, yeah.
Diego's going the full 90.
Well,
Darlington Nagby's going 120 if he gets
there. That's the thing,
man.
Diego Rossi's going, like, he could probably go, like, if he had to, a full 120. He seems like he's got that. Mm-hmm. I know that a lot of times they bring in Matan and they do different things, but Rossi seems like he'll be a dog for this one. Cucho is
Morris,
the big...
Aiden Morris would cut off his foot to play in this game. Because I know he's been dealing with ankle injuries, right?
Yeah, he has. He's been fighting through it. That's why he keeps getting subbed off. Yeah. But, hey, you know what? Get him right for this game. Give us... for this group, I know we've said it. I don't want to harp on it too much. But I don't know what the summer holds for this team. This is... You need the best effort this team has left in it.
Yeah.
For this current group of guys, we need to see that on Saturday. That's the only way you win this thing, is if you get the absolute best from the majority of these players. And it's going to be a huge test, but that's what this team is all about, man. They seem to answer the bell when the big test comes.
Neighbor Eric got to be a mess.
Oh, so is
we,
I think
we were watching the Montreal.
Every crew fan, I think, is going to be a mess for this one.
Meredith and I went over to his house and we were watching the second half of the Montreal, not the Montreal game. Who did they just play? Orlando,
yeah.
And we were watching them. Like, Eric, what are you doing for the game? He's like, I don't know, man. He's like, maybe we can get together or something like that. He's like, but I'm kind of at that like nerve level. I'm like, all right, buddy, we'll see it through together. We'll be all right.
I'm with him. I understand it totally. I've had this question a lot this week. A lot of people asking me, how big would this be if they win this game? And my answer has been simple. It'd be the biggest win in club history.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, there's not a way to frame this any other way. I know it's hard for people who are just focused on Super Bowl, you know, World Series, NBA Championship, Stanley Cup. Well, you won MLS Cup. That's bigger, right? No. Not even because this is the most prestigious tournament from the standpoint of in the world or whatever. It's the fact that you are playing the league that has a bigger budget, the league that has more resources, the league that has had a head start on you, and very rarely have teams gone and been able to do that. No MLS team has gone to Pachuca and beaten them, period. It's not happened.
It has to happen for them to win the cup.
Right. So, like, yet again, the crew have to go to Mexico and do something none of these other slap-ass teams in MLS have ever done. So I'd like to be the first at that. And I'd like to get another piece of hardware to hoist. And I'll tell you what, I know they probably won't, but if they win this, there should be not only a parade, you should have a day off in the city of Columbus. That's how big this is to me. I mean, it's
yeah, you pull the double, man.
Dude, it's unbelievable. They should get double-decker buses
in
honor of the double and have the players on double-decker buses, and we should have another parade. But I don't know that'll happen. I'm just saying that's how monumental this would be for this. The whole state should be celebrating this. Even down in Cincinnati, they should be tipping their caps to how great
that could
this
have
is.
Been us.
It would never be.
Nah.
Never would be. Nah. Couldn't do that. But hey, congrats on your regular season victories. I'm sure that's really a special thing. So anyway, that's what's at stake this weekend. I hope you're properly amped for it. I am too. Do you want to do predictions on this?
I have no vibe on this game.
Dude,
I'm not confident, but I'm not confident. I'm not feeling good heading into this. I'm not feeling bad. It's just like one of those things where, so when things get overwhelming to me, like I throw up my walls and I like kind of emotionally shut down.
Yeah.
That's kind of where I am with this game.
Like, I'll tell you
where I'm like, I'm excited about it. I'm looking forward to it. But until we get to kickoff, I don't really know what my emotions are going
to
be.
Let me put it. This is the best thing. This is the best grasp of this game that I have to offer to the people. You know how when the crew are playing their style and they're playing it well, it looks like they're about to give the ball away
a thousand times,
and yet they continue to hold on to it inexplicably. That looks really dangerous and can make you very nervous. What worries me is if the Crew end up looking the other way. If we get the first 10, 20 minutes of this game and the Crew have the ball and they're not even being challenged with it, if they're passing it around the back and there's 30 yards of space mm-hmm. between them and the first Pachuca forward, that will worry me more than if Pachuca is in their face, on top of them, trying to get the ball. Because that would be the smartest thing Pachuca could do, is to sit back and say, we know you like to play out of the back. Go ahead. Play out of the back all you want. We're going to wait till we get our spot, and we're going to counter you, and we're going to kill you.
And we would just pass it around for 45 minutes.
Right. I'm saying, like, now, again, that would allow the Crew to be able to save some energy, I guess. But what I'm saying is, when the Crew are at their best, they are on a razor's edge.
Totally.
They need to be on the razor's edge, and it needs to look dangerous, and you need to be worried, and you need to be nervous. But that's when the
and
Crew are at their...
like they did the...
No.
Last time against Tigres and Monterrey.
You can't give up goals in front of your own with stupid back passes and things like that. But what I'm saying is they need to be right on that perfect razor's edge. If that's how they look in the first 20 minutes, I will believe they can go on to win this game. If in the first 20 minutes they're sitting around with the ball and Pachuca's just letting them have it, that will worry me. Obviously, if Pachuca has the ball a ton and we can't even step to it, then forget about it. This is over. Like, the only way I see the Crew winning this game is if they are drawing Pachuca out and then making those plays that open up everything. They have to sucker Pachuca in. They have to fool them. If it's not like that, if Pachuca's just sitting back being cagey, could be a long day. If we have to work really hard in that final third with seven guys behind the ball for them, that's a tough assignment.
That's not what we do.
No. And that's what, if I were Pachuca, that's how I would defend this Crew team. So pay attention to that. If Pachuca looks like they're on the front foot, they're trying to get every ball, we're pulling them out, they've got their defenders are up on the half, midfield line trying to, that's a good sign, because as long as we're keeping the ball, we're not giving it away stupidly, then that's a really good sign that we can go get what we need out of this game.
Hey, they said you couldn't do it in a one-off cup final. Everybody said you can't do it.
They've got some experience. They've had some experience in one-off cup finals with this type of play against really talented, more expensive teams. So we'll see how they do.
That one was at home, though.
That was at home. This is not 8,000 feet of elevation.
I'm glad that the grass will be better than down in Monterey, too.
Let's
that
hope
was
so,
a disaster.
Man. Do they know how to grow grass there? I hope they do. Yeah. All right. We'll take a break. We come back. Beam's team has won a championship, and we'll talk about it next. You're listening to Bone and Beam United. You can always tweet the program at Bone Beam United. We appreciate that. So, speaking of United, Brandon's team, Manchester United. Talked about it before. I actually almost forgot to bring it up because I thought such a foregone conclusion last week that Manchester City in Manchester United, Manchester Derby for the FA Cup final.
Second year in a row.
Did you have high expectations going into that one, Beam?
Oh, I think if you run back the replay of last week's episode right at the very end, obviously I had high expectations. I said they were going to go and win, and, Manchester was red. I think if you go back to the replay, I was obviously very excited. So
I feel like you might have said it was going to be 5-0.
I did. I did say it was going to be 5-0, and I said that it was going to be in favor of Manchester City. So. Uh-huh. I'll take you through our kind of weekend and the way this was lining up. So Skip Mossick, who hosts a program here, Skip does everything at the radio station. He's been working here for like 40 years. He's incredible. He does like all the stuff with, when you hear Ohio State broadcasts,
happened because Skip Mossick made it happen.
Correct.
It's the only way it happens.
True. When you hear Paul Keels and Jim Lachey and Matt Andrews and those guys like on the network calling Buckeye games, Skip is there like every step of the way. Like, he is with the Buckeye football team, he's with the basketball team, and he also hosts a golf show called Tee to Green. Well, Skip, his son graduated from high school. So, like, 6 weeks ago, he called me, and he was like, hey, Brandon, can you fill in on Tee to Green for me this weekend? I don't know who plans a high school graduation at 10 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday of, like, Memorial Day weekend, but... Would you be able to fill in? I'm like, yeah, man, totally. Like 9 a.m. on a Saturday, I'm up by then anyways. Like, it's no big deal. I like golf. I'll pre-record a couple of things. Like, it'll be good. And I filled in for Skip once a year, I feel like, for the last 5 years. And by the way, it's like the most nerve-wracking hour of radio that I do, because that show is held in such high regard, unlike our, like, my morning show, that I get, like, nervous doing Skip show, because I'm like, that's his baby. I don't want to, like, mess up his baby.
It's almost like you're nervous for the audience, because there's obviously a lot of golf fans that enjoy that show, but you're almost nervous for Skip, because you're like yeah. Skip, this is his... All that other stuff he does is his job. This is his passion.
Totally.
Like, tee to green is his passion.
And we talked to a guy named Kenny Reed. He was from Scotland, so, like, that was cool, and I had pre-recorded a couple of things. Then I got thinking, like, the middle of the week, I'm like, wait a minute, I feel like I got something going on at 10 o'clock on Saturday. Then I'm like, wait a minute, cup final. Like, I got a cup final to watch. And so I'm driving into the radio station, you know, like 7:30 on Saturday morning, just making sure that everything was good in there. And I told Mayor, I'm like, hey, I'm going to City Tavern after the game. I don't know what you guys want to do. She's like, I'm not going to bring William. Like, it's going to be loud. It's going to be raucous. I'm like, yeah, maybe, kind of depending on the vibe of the game. So I got off work at like 9:56, made sure to hit my heart and my out, like, on time too. I'm like, I'm going to build myself as many minutes as I can get over to City Tavern right there on 4th Street to watch the game with our buddies. So I walk in, it's about like 6-7 minutes into the game. And I turned on Sirius XM. I turned on like ESPN FC. So like they were doing like the live broadcast of the game. And so the first 6 minutes I'm like listening in the car on the drive over there. And it was just like Erling Haaland had a chance. I forget who else had a chance for City. And it's like Rashford's down at the other end. I'm like, oh my, just wait a second until I get there like, in front of the TV. Because last year in the FA Cup, City had scored 2 minutes into the game. And it was just like done, dusted, see you later. This is going to be an 88-minute coronation now. So I get there. It was good. One of my buddies, Jordy, he saved me a seat there. Neighbor Eric was right next to him. Okay. So neighbor Eric came down too. Chris Blaine was standing right behind me. He's a big United fan. Yep, so we get to spend some time together. Murph was there. American Joe was there. So like everybody who had come to the games, I feel like all year long and over the last couple of years were there. And everyone was like, okay, this isn't bad. It's pretty good. And it's like 15 minutes off the clock, 0-0. 20 minutes off the clock, 0-0. Okay. All right. What do you do? Then boom, goal. United. Like, oh my. Like, what are you doing? Because City had the really awful, awful mishap at the back, landed right at Garnacho's feet, like open net. I'm like, they don't usually do that. So you had to capitalize. So United go up 1-0, and then one of the more unbelievable goals I've seen from a team who finished with a negative goal differential this year in the Premier League in United, Rashford plays this ball out to Garnacho. Like this, one of the views from the stands was like mesmerizing because it was kind of at like a back angle, and you see Rashford hit this like 55-yard pass from the left side of the field all the way like diagonal right ball down the field, like Garnacho charging after it. He plays it on to Bruno. Bruno, on the replay, you can see he's, like, trying to look for Kobbie Mainoo the whole time. Like, where are you at? Where are you at? Where are you at? Ball comes right play to him. He's, like, looking to the right. Flips, passes it to the left. Mainoo scores. It's 2-0. I'm like, well, now you got to win.
Yeah,
I'm like, now it's like, okay, it's real now. Now you're up 2-0 against City. I know it's at Wembley, but I'm like, you got to find a way to win, which made me more nervous for the entire second half, the fact that they were up.
Oh, yeah. I imagine on City sidelines, there had to, or on the whatever, the touchline, the whatever you want to call it. I have to imagine there was a little bit of that Rocky quote going on from when Apollo Creed is like in the first fight with Rocky and his trainer comes up and is like, he doesn't know it's a damn show. He thinks it's a damn fight. Like, you got to wake up here. This is not just going to happen.
Pep was drinking water on the sideline, like nervously. Like,
it was totally not what I expected. Now, Manchester City, of course, they have all the talent in the world. They have all the players. They have all the stuff. Manchester United clearly has plenty of talent of their own. Mm-hmm. But that talent has not always flourished in the biggest moments when you need them to. And clearly they've missed on some guys. City's hit on some guys. They have quite a bit bigger budget, even than a team like Manchester United.
United spends. They spend poorly.
Yes, they don't, they don't make the right expenditures, and they end up with guys that just don't work out. However, you're up 2-0 in this game. At that point, that's all out the window. It's the guys on the field that day getting the job done, and it was the Red Devils were the ones getting the job done. It was not the guys in that sky blue. So you had to, at that point, feel like this could really happen.
Well, I did until City scored in like the 81st minute. Then I'm like, oh, Jesus. I'm like, I know exactly what these next 15 minutes are going to look like.
And you were right.
The whole time, yeah. I mean, it's a bar full of United supporters. And so it was so funny. Like, it was loud. It was rocking first half. Like, getting into the 60th, 70th. Like, it's rocking, feeling good. As soon as City scored, everyone's like, just get across the finish line. Yeah. At 2-1, like, I mean, you could literally hear a pin drop in there. Like, it was nervous energy because, I mean, yeah, it was only 1 year removed since you were in that game, but you were out of that game. You haven't really played anything of meaning this season. You've got your ass kicked so many times over the last few years, and to do it against them, to hold them, like, they won the treble last year. Congrats to them. They won 4 in a row in the Premier League. To keep them just to one trophy this year and then United also get a trophy, like, that, to me, was pretty good.
I mean, on trophies, it's even.
It is.
You each had one trophy for the end of your... Now, one of them was the Premier League title, which is, I mean, you could argue, slightly more prestigious, I would say.
Correct.
But the FA Cup trophy is of its own very prestigious nature. It's one of the oldest trophies in all of soccer. So, yeah, it's certainly something worth hanging your hat on. I'm sure in that moment, though, all you could think of is just get this game over. Yeah, blow totally. The whistle.
The clock is going so slow.
You're telling me there were no thoughts that, like, maybe we could get a third goal and just ice this thing?
No. Well, there was. There was a breakaway with, because I think there were, like, 9 minutes of stoppage time seven. Yeah, why wouldn't there be?
You got to win it.
And they're going to make it. The 95th minute or whatever, and Hoyland's, like, tearing down the field, and half of the bar was like, go! And then half of the bar was like, go to the corner!
Right, yeah, just do like, any, yes, get this, yeah. Get, yeah. End it however you have to do, whatever you have to do to, like, preserve the victory, but there's a split idea on how that would be best served. And yes, of course.
Yeah, it was a fun time, man, though. It was good for what's been a disaster of a year. And like, I still, like, reports are out there, are they gonna fire Erik ten Hag? And like, I still don't know how to feel about that. I'm like, yeah, I mean, I just,
do you look at the result of one admittedly humongous result and say that changes everything for how this is going to go? I mean, I presume if they don't, let's say they don't make the FA Cup final, let's say they're not even in it, he's not around.
Yeah, no way.
Right? Okay. So the fact you made it is a good thing. That shows that there's something there. Then the fact you win that game shows, obviously.
Coventry, Haji Wright almost beat them.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I forgot all about that. Yeah.
A quarter of an inch away from a VAR going over Aaron Wan-Bissaka's foot.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Almost sunk them.
So it has got to be a conflicting thing for Manchester United fans. Well, I don't know where you stand on that.
They had so many injuries this year too. And like, they were kind of back to like a decently like healthy squad for this cup final. And I think you say on your best day, you can look like this.
Yeah.
On one of your best days, you can look like this. And if you can string that together, like, they can't play that way, like away at Fulham or away at Wolves. They can't do it because all they were doing, which was so funny to me. And I was having this conversation with Chris Blaine, who was standing right behind me. I'm like, they are literally, like, they fired Ole a couple of years ago. All he would do is sit back behind the ball and counterattack, like throw long balls over the top and just, we're going to be speed merchants. We're going to be pace merchants, like throw a long ball down. Somebody's going to go and get it and do something with it. That's what they did.
Yeah,
like
right.
That's what they did in this game. They sat. City couldn't really do anything because they had Lisandro Martinez back who's been very hurt. But he was, I mean, bossing Haaland. By the way, Haaland has played in 6 cup finals, has not scored a goal in them. So, like, that's a thing.
That's
that
a little thing.
They've won plenty of trophies.
Now.
Like, they've done obviously a lot, and they won Champions League last year. But that's a thing now for him.
In big spots, right? I mean, it's not unfair criticism. It wasn't unfair to criticize Lionel Messi for never winning one with Argentina up until he did, right? I mean, that's always, even though you know how great Messi is, there's still going to be questions about that particular record until it's done. So I'm sure Haaland will find his breakthroughs and they've won without those, to your point. But yeah, I mean, at some point he will probably have a ridiculous, we'll laugh about it and say, remember when we talked about how he couldn't score?
Yeah, it's crazy.
But for now it is a thing.
And so I don't know. I don't know how to feel about it. The funniest part of the entire thing is like United finished 8th in the table. So like they were out of Europe like after decision day.
Right.
And the funniest part about it is like ricocheting shot Chelsea because United won the FA Cup. So now they get to go to Europa. So they get to go to Europa. Chelsea drop down to conference, and then Newcastle just get kicked out of Europe. Out of there. So it's like ricochet shot Chelsea on the way out, ricochet Newcastle. Your guys are safe, Villa, because they qualified for Champions League.
Yep,
you get a trophy. You hurt three, because then you take City's big giant title parade down a little bit. Send them into the offseason with question marks. It's like it was, for as shitty of a season as it was, it was by far the best outcome that you could have had, because you had no hope going into it.
Yeah. And this is where I feel like the conflict always occurs, at least in me as a sports fan. And that is, do I want my team that this is soccer's different, right? Because when you're Manchester United, you have the ability to win a trophy in a down year. Mm-hmm. You still have a chance to win a trophy. That's a thing that can really change the way you feel going into the offseason. However, like, it's kind of similar in North American sports, where if your team is really not that good, but then suddenly they sneak into the playoffs and they pull an upset in the first round, then all of a sudden, you know, the team that was kind of like middling and maybe not doing enough with the talent they had, suddenly people say, oh, but look, they made the playoffs. They pulled this upset. They got the, you know, and that might paper over what really is a bigger issue.
Yeah. Well, they've got issues for sure.
And that's where I think Manchester United has some big decisions this offseason, and it makes it a lot more difficult. But problems you're glad to have, I'm quite sure. I bet you would rather have another year of Erik ten Hag, good, bad, or otherwise, whatever he delivers. Would you rather give the trophy back and say, but now we have clarity on what to do with Erik ten Hag?
No.
No, of course not. So,
and also too, like, if it goes wrong, fire him in the middle of next year.
Exactly right. Yeah. It's not like, again, this is not like any other sport where it's like, well, they're going to hang on to this guy for 7 more years now. Because no, it's like 7 more months maybe.
And yeah, that's maybe.
Maybe.
Long.
Like, it depends. How do they look by October? You know, they may, if they start off bad, they could correct that mistake very quickly. Ultimately, I feel like it has a lot more to do with, like you said, the spending and getting it right. Yeah. Finding the right players, making sure you have the right guys. Again, it helps if you have the manager who has a clear vision on what he wants and the club is aligned with that. If they're iffy on him, they may not be as reticent to, you know, they may not be as willing to spend as much this offseason, but, or spend in the directions that make sense for what Ten Hag wants to do. Yeah. A lot of question marks, but you got the trophy.
I just love that Kobe Mainoo is a Manchester United player. I love him so much.
See? The future's bright.
I love him and Garnacho. Just keep them. Keep Bruno, too. I like Bruno because he's my guy. Like, I know that everybody else out there who's not a United fan absolutely hate him. Yeah. He's been terrific. And you keep those three guys. I don't know, really care what goes on with the rest, but those three I'm good with.
See? There you go. You do, and I know Bruno's not this guy, but the other two, those are some young guys, some good talent.
Yeah, 19.
Dudes that, I always love it when you see guys scoring goals and their number is like 47. Or like that's when you know it's like, that's going to be a superstar
Kobe
someday,
Mainoo,
kid.
30, number 37. Right. Garnacho just went from 49 to 17 this
year. That's right. That's what I'm saying.
I'm guessing he's going to get a bigger number next year, probably.
That's what I mean. The when you see kids doing that in finals with goofy numbers on the back of their shirt, just go ahead and just buy stock, because you know that's probably going to be a thing going forward. That dude's probably going to be pretty good. All right, let's talk a little bit about the Champions League final. Of course, Real Madrid, the massive favorites, going up against Borussia Dortmund. Great season for Dortmund, and I don't want to sound like I'm about to say, but Madrid's going to kill him here. I don't think that's necessarily the case. I mean, Dortmund has every chance to win this game. It is going to be a very tough battle. Yeah, if you have to put money on it, if you were betting on it, there's only one way that makes sense to me. If you're just trying to get the result right, if you're trying to
correct score 1-0, Marco Reus goal scorer,
that would be quite a thing. I feel like 1-0 is probably the least likely scoreline in this game.
No, I feel like it is the most, because like the last 4 or 5 Champions League final, it's all been 1-0.
Really?
Yeah.
I hadn't even thought of that.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like in this game, I feel like it's going to be a little bit more open. I feel like Madrid's going to have a ton of chances. I almost feel like it goes more like a 2-1 or maybe even a 3-1 type of scoreline, where I do think Madrid wins. I do think they control the play, but I think Dortmund finds a way to, like, you know, make it difficult for them and maybe even takes an early goal lead or something. And then Madrid has that nerviness of, are we going to really blow this? Is it going to happen?
You know, the last time that Real Madrid lost a cup final, European Cup final?
I don't know, actually.
1983. It's been 41 years since they've lost in a European Cup
final. Well,
because
they just never go.
The last European Cup final they went to was 1983. How many do they have now? Like 13, 14?
Oh, my 14? God. I think it's 14.
Yeah, it's disgusting.
I mean, I'm saying there's one team that has clearly the advantage of experience. You have a lot of guys on this team that have been there, done that, from whether the Luka Modrics of the world and the Toni Grosses and stuff like that. But then you also have plenty of other guys that are going to be able to get this done for Real Madrid. But yeah, I, as much as your Dortmund scoreline there would be fun and be quite the storyline.
What a way to send Marco Reus out, right?
Would be. I mean, that would be a nice thing for him, but
it's not going to happen.
What a way to send Toni Kroos out if you could, with, you know, a win.
Or your
there.
Guy Luka Modric, who apparently has said, "I'm staying at Real Madrid," and all the reporters like, "Are you?"
Dude, I almost am getting the vibe now that Real Madrid is like, "No, please ask him again because we don't want him to stay."
Right?
Like, because he's been adamant. Like, every time he does, like, "I feel like I can play for another few years. I don't know when retirement is, but it's not this year." And the reporters are like, "So it's Wednesday now. How do you feel about retirement today?
How do you feel about retiring after the match on Saturday?
You're retiring, correct?" And it's like, "No, I d-." Now, again, maybe this is all because behind the scenes, everyone around soccer, apparent, maybe they know, like, Modric, if he wins, he's going to walk off the field, hold his head up high and say, "I go out of champions, see you later." Like, yeah, maybe that's it. But I wonder if, because his buddy is also going out at the same time,
totally,
maybe he's like, "I don't want to, this is his moment. I'll get my moment a year from now, or so I want another year. And then I'll, you know, I'll go out when I want to, but I want him to have his moment. I'll have mine." Either way. Yeah.
Things don't like work like that at Madrid.
No,
not there. Not
don't.
There. They don't.
No. But again, most players at Madrid are not
normal,
these guys
yeah,
are not Luka Modric.
Right.
You know, it's like, that's the thing is there's, but hell man, you've got players that are as good as Luka Modric has been. And you know how much I love him. There are players vastly even better than him in the world's game of soccer, which that's a very select group, that have been told it's time to move on from Real Madrid. So, like, it's just, that's how it works,
man. Cristiano, hey.
Yeah, sorry.
Pal, you've been great for us, but Benzema's really starting to kick it up a notch. Why don't you find a new home?
Yeah, and again, I mean, the difference is Luka Modric has no problem coming off the bench. Cristiano Ronaldo is never going to do that, but.
Hey, he just broke the Saudi Pro League record for goals.
Oh, I saw. There was also a video
of him celebrating like he won a World Cup.
God, did you see the video of him? I don't even know who they were playing, but it was, you know, the ball gets, it's a ball in the air.
I did.
Being set up. It bounces a few yards in front of the 18. And then the keeper, whose like toe is on the 18 yard box, maybe his toe is slightly outside of it, but the ball he catches clearly inside the 18 yard box. And Cristiano Ronaldo is like jumping around and pointing at the ref and pointing at the ground and like, "Oh," like he touched it illegally.
He's
and
doing his classic Ronaldo, like
lose his mind routine.
Out.
And it's like, and I saw people just like, "Give it a rest, dude." Like, it wasn't even close. It wasn't even controversial. It was a routine play. And he's losing his mind over it. So, in either case, Champions League final, you sticking with 1-0 Dortmund or?
3-0 Real Madrid.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to go with 2-1 Madrid. I think it is a tougher game. I respect Dortmund a lot.
Respect the hell out of him.
Yeah. I was actually, funny enough, I was talking about how I had conversation with some English blokes earlier. Yeah. I also, last week, our friends came in from Germany.
Okay.
So Melissa has a college roommate that she was, you know, at Ohio State with. So Kristen, her roommate, was from New Jersey. She is, though, fluent in German. Oddly enough, she is Korean by descent.
Okay.
But family had some German ancestry, and so then she learned German as a kid. She took German in college, ended up working in the German bank, Deutsche Bank, in the financial district in New York, where she met her now husband, Stefan, who is from Germany. They now live in Germany, so they were in town. Whenever they come into town, we try to see them. And it was so great talking soccer with him because we just – it was so funny because I wanted to talk German soccer, and he was like, yes, German soccer. How about the NFL, though? And, like, I was like –
That's my job.
Is why we get,
no.
No, but it's funny because we get along, though, because, like, in his country, he's like, "I could talk soccer all day, but how about NFL?"
Yeah.
Because that's something that is – he doesn't get to talk about as much there. And I'm like, "Well, I could talk NFL all day, but I don't get to talk soccer with someone." So we had that – we both like the things in the other person's country, which I enjoy because that we have similar personalities.
He said, "Tell
way.
Me about Deshaun Watson."
He's a Giants fan. He said because he said I just picked all the New York teams because New York's the easiest city to go to. So he's like a New York fan, Knicks, and he actually loves basketball too. But
what are your thoughts on Aaron Rodgers and his vice presidential campaign?
Yeah, we had, oh man, it was great. Like I love talking to people from other countries and learning about like it's good to know that their countries have the same BS going on we have in ours. Like, there's stupidity all around. But, yeah, ultimately with this, he said, you know, everybody except for Munich fans are rooting pretty much for Dortmund to do this. But he said, yeah, I mean, it seems impossible, you know, and it's like, right.
And
I mean,
the rest of the soccer world is cheering for Dortmund on Saturday.
Like in Germany, everyone's cheering for them. I'm guessing everyone outside of Munich is. And then
everybody outside of Barcelona.
Yeah, is cheering for well.
Well, nobody's cheering for Real Madrid.
No one's cheering for Madrid outside of Madrid.
Yeah, nobody.
Bayern Munich fans, maybe. Maybe.
Maybe.
But then they got...
They got beat by them in the semifinals.
Yeah, so it's like, no, screw them. So, yeah, they wanted to have an all-Germany final, and they didn't get it because of Real Madrid. So even they can't root for Madrid. So no one's rooting for Madrid except for me and Madrid, like Madrid fans. So I guess I'm a Madrid fan. I'm rooting for Real Madrid. But, yeah.
You're a Madrid snob. That's
well,
okay.
You know what it is, though? No, I just, Beam, I just like good soccer, you know? Mm-hmm. I can't just watch the riffraff that everybody else watches. My eyes can only see the most pure form of it, and that is from, of course,
Real Madrid,
Los Galacticos. Mm-hmm. That's exactly it. So 3-1, Real Madrid. Finally, before we go, we mentioned it earlier. CONCACAF application has been put in by Greenland. Now, funny enough, they technically, because they are a Dutch country,
I didn't know they were Dutch. Okay.
I think the Netherlands run. They are. Greenland somehow is kind of how Canada was for a long time with Great Britain, maybe still is. I don't know. Technically, their money, their system, their whatever, it all falls under the Netherlands. I believe I'm correct on that. It's either
Danish.
Them or, oh no, it's Denmark. That's what it was. Okay.
It's Denmark.
Sorry. I always do that with the Netherlands and Denmark. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry.
Whoa, man.
Dutch and Danes.
Whoa. They are very different.
I know they are. But
Denmark,
they technically could have theoretically gone through UEFA, but there is something blocking that. They are not, for whatever reason, I guess, I don't know if it's UEFA's just like, we've got too many countries, sorry, there's no room for you. Or maybe they just felt like the path would be easier in CONCACAF. But because they are on the North American continent, it obviously makes way more sense that they would be a part of CONCACAF, just like Canada is too. So they have applied for membership to CONCACAF. God, I would love it. If there is a qualifying match where, you know how that is, random draw.
Of course.
The only place they could play it is in Nuuk. They do have a soccer field there. It's not big. I mean, it's a soccer field, but it's not like it has a stadium around it or anything. I would love to see the international broadcasters descend on Nuuk. Now, again, the chances of them getting to a point where they would ever play the U.S. or Mexico or Canada or one of the big boys, very unlikely, and because typically...
Can you imagine watching the U.S. men's national team play?
Dude, I'm telling you. You got to look this thing up. It's essentially they're playing on a high school field. Like, it'd be great. I would love to see it. But they are clearly a long ways away from ever getting to a point of being competitive, one would believe, in CONCACAF. However, they're trying to build their soccer program up. They're applying for membership. They apparently have had a soccer program that is trying to get it going. I believe
welcome them on in.
I hope so. And outside of the U.S., I will be rooting for Greenland. I will be hoping for them to do great things. Now, I believe their team nickname is the Polar Teddy Bears.
Great.
If I'm not mistaken. So
go Polar Teddy Bears.
I want to see the jersey game. I hope that all the big like jersey providers lean in and go, we want to do, like, they should look at these smaller clubs and these smaller countries and say, this is our chance to really go crazy.
Yeah. Instead of just doing the boring template.
Well, because then you know what would happen. You get a design that hits. Have you ever seen the Madison?
Forward Madison.
Yeah. Their jerseys are sick. They're always great. They're always taking risks. They're always taking chances. They're always fun. And I don't really know much about their team or don't follow their, you know, part of whatever USL on the structure they are. But I would buy a Forward Madison jersey because I think it's cool. I like it. I'm saying that's what you should be doing with the Greenlands of the world.
Yeah.
You should be trying out your coolest, craziest stuff. And then if it hits, you can go, hey, let's modify that for like some other country down the road, a bigger country that, you know, like Denmark, for example.
Maybe the Netherlands.
Yeah, maybe the Netherlands. That has nothing to do with apparently Greenland. I totally screwed that up. I knew as I was saying, I was like, that might be wrong. It might be Denmark. I've messed it up again.
Danes, Dutch. There are two kinds of people I hate in this world. People who are insensitive to other people's culture. And the Dutch.
Oh, it's
Look
great.
At you.
The perfect way to end it. Perfect way to end it. All right. Enjoy the weekend of champions. We'll see you next week. Thanks for listening to Bone and Beam United.